Well, my practical advice to just give athletes more time to cope with what's happening around them, around the competition. So when he's lifting or she, just be a little bit more thoughtful and more encouraging to them, which the younger athlete appreciate much more in the long term.
Hi, Ivan. It's my pleasure to have you on Evidence Strong show. Please introduce yourself.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here. My name is Ivan Perasovic, and I'm a PhD student at the University of Kinesiology of Split, first year now. I'm also a strength and conditioning coach, and I'm hoping to do research more on the impact of stress and the performance levels of athletes in various sports, mainly now focused on team sports, but also in weightlifting and other strength and endurance sports. So that's the short story.
You also have some experience in weightlifting.
I was three times national champion in weightlifting in the category of 94 and 100 afterwards, yes. So I was around 10 years in active Olympic weightlifting, was part of the national team. So my results were good for this region. So I'm quite well aware of how it is to train, how it is to compete, and how it is to implement those Olympic techniques in other sports. So that's my background and I also teach Olympic weightlifting at the college. I'm a lecturer at the college that involves Olympic weightlifting and strength and conditioning.
Today we'll be talking about hormones and Olympic weightlifting. And so let's start with that. Could you explain the three hormones you used in your study and measured them during the competition, but what are the main roles of these hormones in weightlifting performance?
Okay, so we have actually two hormones and one enzyme. So cortisol and testosterone are hormones. Alpha amylase is an enzyme. So basically, cortisol is the hormone of stress, as you all know. The body produces when you're under stress. And alpha amylase is an enzyme that is neuro-based. It's being produced by the salivatory glands in the mouth, and it is not hormonal-based. It is more based on the central nervous system, and it's a response also to stressful situations, but mainly its cause is to dilute sugar. So basically it's an enzyme for digestion, but it has been shown that it has been excreted when you're under certain amount of stress. And testosterone is the hormone, yes, male hormone for strength and power that we all need when you do some exercises that are mainly strength based. So what we found out and what is already in the research, enzyme alpha amylase and cortisol are very good correlated. The thing is, and the main difference is, except that there are enzymes and hormones, the thing is that alpha amylase is produced not instantly, but very close because it is neuro-based, and the cortisol is afterwards produced after 20-30 minutes after stress. So the main thing is, if our main thing was that when we extrude the enzymes and the hormones, how does that affect our performance? Does it go down? Does it go up? And how does it variate during the lifts, before the lifts, and somewhere in the middle when you have the pause between the snatch and the clean and jerk? And of course, the testosterone was also based to see how does that go up and down during those phases. So that was our main thing when we were trying to conduct this study.
No, this study is very, very special because not only you were trying to measure hormones and an enzyme during weightlifting performance, but it was performance during a real competition. Could you speak about that?
Yes, because actually the idea of the research came when I was talking to my professor at college, who later became my mentor on the PhD. So he did conduct these studies on various team sports as netball and volleyball, also with the players, but also with the coaches and with the referees. And since I'm involved in weightlifting, we were talking and the competition was just coming up. It was December and we had this competition, but it was not individual. It was team-based, but it was still a competition, the national finals. So the difference is here you have individuals, here you have clubs that are competing with five individual lifters and they combine their score and that's how you get the main, the winner. So we're looking a little bit about the research. Every research that was done on Olympic weightlifting was mostly done during some training exercises or some mock competitions, as in training competitions. So this was a little bit more specific because it was a real championship. We had 46 in total. Maybe one or two didn't want to participate, but mostly because they were a little bit more anxious, and so it was all in all, it was good. But this was a good way to see how the hormones behave in a real life competition.
National level competition, team competition, all the teams from the country come to combat for the title of the fourth team in the country. Now, how did you design the measurement? So how did you design when you will measure, what time points were they, and so on, and how you collected the data?
Well, so how we collected the saliva samples, first and foremost, you have cotton swabs that the individual has to put inside their mouth. Prior to that, he must not take any fluids, like maybe 5 to 10 minutes. We kept it 10 minutes to be safe. He has to put it underneath the tongue, keep it there 2 to 3 minutes. We also kept it maybe 2.5 minutes, 2 minutes. And then he takes it out, puts it in a small plastic container. We type his code. We had to take the baseline. What we did is we took when they came inside the hall, lifting hall, we took the baselines, and then afterwards we took before their group was coming out on the podium to lift. So how the championship is, how the competition is conducted, you have groups, A, B, C, D group. So in the national, and when you have the team championship, it's not that important who is, how much you lift. So basically they come to a mutual agreement who is going to be in the first group, second group, third group. We decided to take when they came into the weightlifting hall to do the weights, so do the weigh-in. So we done it there. They then took a quick questionnaire. And afterwards, they were warming up. And before they go to the first lift, they took the swab. And when they did the 3D, so snatch 1, 2, 3. After the third one, they got the swab, took it, hold it. And then we had rest before pin and jerk lift, also 1, 2, 3. And afterwards, we took the third sample. So that's how we conducted it. And afterwards, it was analyzed by our biochemist in our laboratory.
And they went off to analysis, and you are after measuring the levels of the hormones and the enzyme to know how these levels changed across the competition though.
What we did see is for alpha amylase, so it went in males, it went much significantly higher than in females. So the baseline is the same, but it was much higher in males than in females. The cortisol levels were in the middle, higher for males than in females, but afterwards, after the last lift, it got lowered for the males and it was higher for the females. And later on, testosterone has been shown to be also higher than males and vice versa, the females, because, you know, males have more testosterone, of course, much, but all in all, the cortisol levels, they show significant difference because all the other markers were basically what we expected them to be. Of course, the testosterone levels, of course, they're going to be higher, and especially in the middle, after the workout, you, of course, you have a spike in testosterone, and later on, it goes down after the second workout. And females was basically the same, but only lower. But cortisol levels were also higher in the middle from both males and females. But afterwards, it was much higher in females than in males. So what was our conclusion is basically the coping mechanism of female or looker is for a little bit more different, and their lack of testosterone for coping with cortisol levels. And also do note that most of the female lifters were much younger than their male counterparts. So they were much less experienced in that area. And usually when it comes to strength in strength sports, males tend to be a little bit more in advance because of the testosterone that they have, which is normally, and the body weight that they possess. So maybe because of the females were a little bit more insecure, didn't know how to cope with the level of stress that they faced there. So basically that was our explanation for why their cortisol levels was much higher than the males. Well, I forgot to say about the testosterone levels, because the females did exhibit a greater relative increase in testosterone throughout the competition, which is from 27.5 till 29 plus snatch and pre-competition. So in contrast, the percentage increase in males was significantly lower. And this is also can be attributed to the fact that there was a heightened acute stress response to the competition that was highly linked to psychological and physiological demand during the competition. I forgot to say about those things about the T levels. So basically that's the thing.
What was the difference? I didn't catch. What was the percentage difference in females versus no?
So the difference, there was an increase of 27.5% from pre-competition to post-snatch and 29% from pre-competition to post-clean and jerk. In contrast, the increase in males was significantly lower, 14.5% and 5% respectively. And the surge, this relative surge in T among in testosterone among female athletes may indicate the high acute stress response to the competitions that was linked to psychological arousal and physiological demand. So although female athletes have typically lower T levels, in the competitions, they did increase its T levels more than their male counterparts because of these psychological levels, motivations, and so on. And about the alpha amylase and cortisol levels, they increase significantly during the competitions. And so what that indicates that the sympathetic nervous system and particularly adrenaline was activated. It does suggest that the alpha amylase levels were heightened during the post snatch and post clean, which also consists. The previous studies show that alpha amylase is a reliable indicator of the sympathetic nervous system activation during high intensity exercises. So that's what I wanted to say, why the alpha amylase is a good way, because it's non-invasive and you can see that the nervous system is highly activated during that time. So if you have a high level, high intensity workout, it's quite a reliable indicator that the sympathetic nervous system was activated and that you were aroused quite good. So that's why I wanted to highlight also.
Awesome.
So and when it comes to cortisol levels, the post snatch, like I said, they kept after the post clean and jerk, it was heightened also because of the testosterone levels were more heightened in females than in males, possibly due to those things, and also because of the way they react to certain stresses and so on. What was one of the things that we will try to do if we have the chance for is how to cope with these mechanisms. So how to lower the cortisol levels much more to lower the breathing, lower the heart rate, and try to do the best performance as we can during that time.
Okay, I have a question about it. So my understanding is that for optimal performance in Olympic weightlifting, you have to have some level of arousal. So you can't be totally filled and relaxed because you will not perform the best.
No.
So how it relates to the levels of cortisol? It is go as high as you can, or obviously if you go too high, that's too much. And
yeah, that's the thing about arousal. Arousal is different for everyone. For me, something that arouses me doesn't necessarily arouse you the same way. So be it negatively, be it positively. So arousal can be, like, I have this, my personal experience when I was in the national championships. I did my best snatch when the European championship was in Split. I did 130 on the snatch, which was my best in the competition. Afterwards, I was so aroused by that. I was so, as I said, I wasn't afraid. I wasn't anything. We didn't do any, unfortunately, we didn't have any of these bell micers then. But I went on the clean and jerk and I was planning on to do 160. But just to keep it sure, my coach told me, okay, go 145, just in case. I went there, I went out on the stage, I was completely frozen. So I didn't do anything. So the way that actually I do, like, that I do sets with, threes or fives in five or four sets, I couldn't even lift it. My whole technique was terrible. I was too much aroused to do it. So the thing is, this is individually based, of course, but the stress levels and the cortisol levels must be high, of course. They have to be high because you're doing something and it automatically releases the hormones that are responsible for you to do something at all. And one of the most hormones is cortisol because it prepares you for something. You're doing something, especially when you're higher level stressed. But not too much. And that is the thing, is the coping mechanisms to do it. One of the reasons why maybe the females were all hormone-based, there are differences. But also the age, they were much younger. So they were not. Also, I have to know that Olympic weightlifting in Croatia is not a professional sport, you have to understand. It's a semi-professional sport. We have a couple of professional athletes, but nobody lives from this sport. So everybody does a side job. While I was competing, I was working as a coach myself and so on. So it's a bit harder to go all in into it. So that's also one of the drawbacks of this study. But this is the best that we have here in our country. So also I think the experience level is also to be noted, that they're much less experienced. That's maybe why they were aroused a bit more and had a little bit more stress than the male counterparts. The level of arousal is also subjectively. It's not objectively, unfortunately, because like I said, something that arouses you in a good way doesn't necessarily arouse me the same way. And because I'm aroused doesn't mean I'm going to do the same good job if you're not there. I mean, you have to be somewhere. Arousal has to be high, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to do a better job than you're going to do with a better job without that arousal. So that's one of the things, if I made myself clear, I hope.
All right. Did you look at the performance level or maybe the success rate? So how many lifts they hit versus how high the cortisol or testosterone level was?
Yes, we did. And it was a good choice. So all in all of them succeeded their stretch goals. So most of them hit the goals that they were planning to hit. But like I said, these goals were not their highest results, what they usually do, their PRs. So like I said, this, when you do a team championship, you already know what you're going to lift. And you make sure that you can lift it. So you're not going to gamble that much. The thing is, this is also experience-based. So what we found is that mostly experienced lifters, we also had some, you know, we call them sideliners, because we had four that were really high level athletes that did the Olympics, that they were competing here, but they were past their prime also, but they showing basically no significant cortisol levels or stress levels or alpha-amylase, you know. Yes, but they were sideliners because out of the 46 that we had, 47, there were three of them who were basically retired. We had one Hungarian, we had also two are from Croatia. They were professional ones, like I said. The thing is, and this is unfortunately the biggest drawback, in my opinion, is that most of our lifters are semi-professional. That is the also bad thing for our sport, but we have to take that into account, that they're semi-professional. They train, but that's the best that we have in our country, and they also all go into the national team and so on. But the sign others we put aside because it was too much of a gap between them. So, you know, so I hope that we do try to conduct in an environment where we have professional lifters who only do and mainly do these things, because, you know, working and training, not two best combinations when you're doing active sports. Probably in high level professional weightlifters, as we saw it in the sideliners, probably the results would be different. I don't think significantly, but they would be different because they're more professional. They're used to this. They know how to handle it and cope with stress. But also, what was one of the things that we will try to do is to have these same lifters, that they still compete, all of them, try to do some breathing exercises to lower their stress levels and try to see if that's going to help. So that's one of the, for the future studies, that's going to be one of the main focuses on that. One of the thing is, what I would like to do is try to educate the athletes, which is one of the most important thing, is how to cope with those stress levels. Because if they can lower their biological, physiological size of stress, they can maybe perform much better during the whole competition or during the game. So trying to figure that out is one of the things that we will try to do. So for instance, breathing interventions and so on. But from my knowledge now and what we seen in these researches and other research papers, is that experience is key to all of that. So more experienced players, more experienced athletes have, and the stress level is the same. It's just the way they deal with that stress is much more different. And when it comes to stressful situations, they have coping mechanisms that they developed by themselves to deal much better with them, which are also based individually. But what I would like to do, and what we will all like to do, is try to unificate that and try to standardize those coping mechanisms to make it available to younger athletes, which is mainly the focus here. Yeah, because the older athletes, they already know how to deal with lots of stress and how to bear themselves in that place.
Okay, so let's try to bring it together. What would be your practical advice for the coaches coming out of your study?
Well, my practical advice, and this is also from the study, but also from the experience-wise, would be to better, as in not better prepare, but to just give athletes more time to cope with what's happening around them, around the competition. So when he's lifting, or she, just be a little bit more, as you say, more thoughtful and more encouraging to them, which the younger athlete appreciate much more in the long term. So just keep them calm. Don't give them too much of an anxiety, or don't arouse them too much, because they're already aroused, but we see. They already have enough arousal for them to, they're already woken up. They already know how to do it. Just to keep them calm and let them breathe in, breathe out, and to put them, to encourage them a little bit more during the phases of the lifting. For instance, and this is also experience-based, the difference between individual and team sport is that individual sports require much more calmness, because they need to be a little bit more calm. They only have one task to do, and they have to do it good. They have to do it perfect. Team sport-based, they have to do a lot more things. Run, shoot, tackle, defend, this, that, and the coaches, they're much more aggressive than the individual coaches of the individual sports. So very also. But when we do the analysis, I'll have much more clear how much more stress they do, because I also have the coaches here in weightlifting we have to do, and also have the coaches in basketball. So we'll see how the different cortisol levels. I think the team coaches will be much, much more aroused than the individual coaches from the individual sports. That's my thing, that will be bigger difference. As I saw it, you know, visually while I was competing and while I was doing coaching myself. But mostly, so like I said, keep them calm, because they're already aroused. No matter how much you think they look calm, as we see, they're already aroused enough. It's just how you push them in the right way. Should you, so don't yell at them, because they already have, maybe they're just too nervous to perform, too much aroused. So giving them too much arousal will be just, we're just going to lead them, I think, to not lift the best they can lift when it comes to this.
Would you have any advice on how to guide male athletes versus female athletes?
Well, when it comes to those things, I think you shouldn't make that much of a difference. Although maybe female athletes do need a little bit more support when it comes to these sort of things, because usually the competition level, because of the testosterone, male athletes tend to be highly, highly, highly competitive, especially in these sort of things. And I think females are a little bit more calmer, and they do tend to deal with these sorts of situations a little bit more harder than their male counterparts. So I think more supportiveness would come much better to them, although of course males also need it, but to guide them a little bit more, less stricter than the male counterparts, I think, because in my experience coaching girls and coaching boys, girls tend to be a bit more responsible when it comes to training and when it comes to doing the tasks that they have, versus the boys, they have tend to be a little bit more everywhere but there when they're, especially when they're training. So personally found that being stricter with boys gets you much better results than being stricter with girls. So that's one of the things that I, from my personal opinion, but also when you see these results, it's much more better to be calmer and more supportive with girls, especially younger girls, than their male counterparts. One of the things also, that this gender specific training, like I said, with females, you have to be a little bit more thoughtful. Also, to give them more time to rest and more sleep, which I believe will positively affect them more. I mean, everybody will affect that, but for them, much more because of their way of their coping mechanisms with stress in usual. So that's basically it.
Do you think it's females in general or females, young females in this study who were a little bit less experienced?
Well, to be honest, when it comes to this particular study, I think their experience levels played a key role inside this, because they were younger. Also, general females do tend to cope with stress levels a little bit different than their male counterparts, like I said. So to be honest, I would have to research a little bit more to see if other females react the same, but I think it's probably the same. Maybe the more experienced level females tend to cope stress with better, but I think when you compare them to their male counterparts, so the high level, I think the males have a slightly more advantage when it comes to dealing with those things. But like I said, I would have to look up that a little bit more, but I think if you compare them, I think females do it tend to be more stressful in these sorts of situations.
I have two short questions to finish. The first one is, what is your favorite lift?
Snatch, definitely, because it's more technical and I'm better at it.
Fair enough. And the last question is, where people can find you if they want to follow your work or ask a question, where should they go?
Well, since I'm not there in the social media too much, I have my own private account, Ivan Perasovic on Instagram. That's my private Instagram account, but also my email address, ivan.perasso@gmail.com, which is my private email address. If you have any questions, you can feel free to ask or to clarify other things. So that's basically it. I'm not that involved in social media. So, and I'm also on LinkedIn, LinkedIn also. So there you can find me on those places.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ivan. It was a pleasure.
Yeah, it was a pleasure also.